is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
I'm Kyle Mullen, editor of the MERS newsletter, filling in for Steve Gruber today. Thanks for joining us on the program today. Well, I'd like to say I got a good night's sleep last night. I did not, though, thanks to the House of Representatives here in our state of Michigan, staying up until 4:30 this morning, passing a Detroit Public Schools reform plan that received exactly zero Democratic support. In total, the House of Representatives was on the floor for 16 hours. They had four Republican caucuses. It spanned two sessions because they had to adjourn at midnight and come back because it was the beginning of a new day. In the end, what they passed was exactly what came out of the House Appropriations Committee on Tuesday, and that is exactly what the mayor of Detroit didn't want to see. Education advocates in the city of Detroit didn't want to see. So what is it? What did they get that they didn't want? Well, for one thing, they didn't get the money that they wanted. The governor, the Senate, the folks in Detroit, they wanted $715 million, and the House gave them $515 because that's essentially what their debt looks like. They were given a little bit of extra money for startup costs, $50 million for startup costs, and the governor wanted $200 million for startup costs, which is the number that the Detroit folks gave him. So looks like they're apart on the money in a tune of about $150 million. So there's that difference. The other big difference is something called a Detroit Education Commission. What on earth is that? Well, anytime you create a new body of government, in government, it's bound to get political and sticky. And this exactly is difficult and sticky. This Education Commission would be in charge of opening and closing schools in the city of Detroit that were not replicas of schools that were receiving A's and B's based on this Detroit Education Commission's own grading scale. So if this commission decided, wow, you're doing a pretty good job, you can go ahead and replicate wherever you want. But if they according to their grading scale, you're not doing so good, then you got to get their say-so before you open up the school. Well, the charter school advocates are a little bothered by that because they don't have those kind of restrictions right now. It's basically a free market in the city of Detroit and elsewhere. If they want to stick a school there, they got the building, got facilities, as long as they get their okays from the appropriate folks in the Department of Education here in the state, they're good to go. They usually don't have any problems on that front. They certainly don't have any local restrictions to this extent, and they're afraid this is going to turn into a political football. Right now, you got a mayor of Detroit who, by and large, from all accounts, is pretty open to charters. He says he's open to charter schools. But what happens with the next mayor? What if the next mayor doesn't like charter schools? Does he, you know what? I'm not quite sure I like this so much. He can just say, nah, no charter schools here. And then charter schools would be stopped. And then here's the other question, too. Let's say this formula works. Let's say we get something like this Detroit Education Commission, and they're actually successful in managing schools in the city of Detroit. Well, they could go ahead and do it statewide, or they could do it in Flint, or they could do it anywhere else that they were having trouble with the placement of schools. Now, I've been covering this here for about a year or so, and I've continuously heard from folks in the city of Detroit that the placement of schools is a problem. You might wonder, well, Detroit's a pretty big city. Why would they have a problem? Well, they actually do have a problem, apparently, in that there are whole neighborhoods that have no schools and a kid has to take a public bus, not a school bus, a public bus, some 6 miles from where they live to get to the nearest school. It's almost like what they refer to as like dead zones in the city of Detroit. And we're not talking about kind of the downtown area where the ballparks and the theaters are. No, no, no. We're talking about like the neighborhoods. You know, remember, we're talking about, what, 150 square miles, something like that. The city of Detroit's pretty huge geographically. So there's areas of it where there are no schools and where this Detroit Education Commission is supposed to help out here, make sure there's no dead zones in the neighborhoods. Well, as it turns out, the House says, no, we're not going to do that. Senate said, well, we wanted to do that. The governor said, I wanted to do it too. They're going to work out their differences in what's called a conference committee. The House and the Senate, the governor are all going to get together, and they're going to come up with a compromise. They better do it fast, because we've only got about a month left before the House and the Senate say sayonara for the summer. All signs are that they'll come up with some kind of agreement one way or the other. Well, the House, in saying no to the Detroit Education Commission, saying no to whatever the Democrats wanted, saying no to whatever the mayor wants and the governor wants. In doing that, though, they have made the charter school folks very happy. They've also made one of their primary breadwinners very happy, Dick DeVos and Betsy DeVos, former gubernatorial candidate. You may remember as Dick DeVos. Betsy DeVos ran the Republican Party for a spell there in the early noughts. They are huge advocates for school choice, huge advocates. They also happen to have some real deep pockets. Last year, at the closing of the year, their family combined gave over $400,000 to the Republican caucus. Combined, they all kicked in quite a bit of money there. Maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration. Was it $300,000? I'll go ahead and take a look here just so I can double check. I'd hate to be inaccurate with that number. Anyway, it was a good chunk of change, and that got them through that particular cycle and made them, you know, pretty competitive with the Democrats. Yeah, here it is. $340,000, what that DeVos family gave the Republican committee. That was almost half of what they raised. That whole quarter came from one family. So when they say, we don't like charter schools, the Republicans say, okay. That's how democracy works sometimes. Well, you're listening to the Steve Gruber Show. I'm Kyle Mullen, editor of MERS, filling in today. We've got a whole show for you planned. Looking forward to it. I hope you are too. We'll be back after this.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
You're listening to the Steve Gruber Show. I'm Kyle Mullen, editor of the MERS newsletter, filling in. Appreciate you joining us here this morning. Well, who was in town yesterday? That was Barack Obama. He hooked up with Flint Mayor Karen Weaver and Governor Rick Snyder at various points at his visit in Flint. He got a pretty good reception when they traveled to a Flint high school to talk to residents there. Rick Snyder did not. After approaching the podium to address the crowd of roughly 1,000, Snyder was instantly and loudly booed by the audience. For several moments, the crowd refused to quiet down and allow Snyder to speak. When he did finally get a chance, he said, "Let me begin by saying I understand why you are angry and frustrated. I want to come here today to apologize." And then at a certain point, he told the crowd, "You didn't create this problem. Government failed you." A comment that earned a yell from the crowd. "You failed us," he responded. "I will apologize and work hard to fix that." When President Obama began his remarks and identified officials in the crowd, all were applauded. Except when he mentioned Snyder, he was booed again. Following today's event, Snyder said the way to help the people of Flint, quote, is to break through political barriers and find a way to work together, which is why I was pleased to meet with President Obama today to share an update on what the state is doing and how the federal government might be able to help us do even more. You know, it's kind of interesting that Governor Snyder addressed the folks of Flint when he had the president next to him. You know, he could count on the president's security to make sure that he was safe. I don't know if he was thinking about that. I kind of was. Folks, he's not very popular in Flint right now. Well, President Barack Obama is promising the people of Flint that he will make sure leaders at all levels of government don't rest until every drop of water that flows through the city's pipes safe. He says clean water is a basic responsibility of government in the United States and says what happened in Flint was a man-made disaster that didn't have to happen. Obama showed his support for Flint residents by drinking filtered city water to show it again safe for consumption.
You know, the water around this table, was Flint water that was filtered. And it just confirms what we know scientifically, which is that if you're using a filter, if you're installing it, then Flint water at this point is drinkable.
Obama also said he understands why they are scared and angry and feeling let down. Flint's water became contaminated with lead after the city began drawing water from the Flint River. Officials failed to treat it properly, causing a lead contamination crisis. Now, the president is also promising Flint that he will make sure leaders at all levels of government don't rest. And again, he was drinking the water. Snyder's been drinking the water. He didn't take it to Europe with him. Said that would have had some issues getting through customs, but he had a big old jug of it. Been carting around Michigan anyway. We had another development on the whole Flint water situation. We had a municipal official in Flint who has pleaded no contest to a misdemeanor charge in connection with the city's drinking water crisis. The state's attorney general's office says Flint utilities manager Mike Glasgow entered a no contest plea Wednesday to one count of neglect of duty. Under an agreement between Glasgow and the state, the plea's effective date will be delayed for 1 year. It will take effect if Glasgow cooperates with investigators. State prosecutor Todd Flood said Glasgow has already provided important testimony showing how state officials orchestrated the manipulation of water test results.
He was the one that was attempting to give notice to the world that we have the Titanic and people are telling us to have the violins keep on playing.
Glasgow oversaw operations of the water plant when Flint switched its water source from the city of Detroit to the Flint River as a cost-saving measure in April of 2014. The attorney general has said this is not the end of the various charges that he plans on laying down. There's two DEQ officials who are still out there as well. Found it interesting that as part of this plea agreement, Mike Glasgow is not being pressed here for a felony that he was being charged with. So it's the misdemeanor offense that he is pleading guilt or no contest, which is different than guilty. He's pleading no contest to. So the felony, I guess, goes away, presuming he cooperates. That's what it looks like from now. Well, in other news, former Michigan State University basketball star Keith Appling has been charged after allegedly bringing a loaded gun into a Dearborn strip club on May the 1st. On Wednesday, he pleaded not guilty. Appling was reportedly observed pulling a gun out of the trunk of a car in the parking lot of the Pantheon Club in Dearborn. Police searched the car and found a handgun under the driver's seat, a loaded assault rifle in the trunk, and a small amount of marijuana. He was placed under arrest. Appling has been charged with carrying a concealed weapon, which is a 5-year felony, possession of a loaded firearm in a vehicle, a 2-year misdemeanor, and possession of marijuana, a 1-year misdemeanor. His attorney is questioning the search of Appling's vehicle.
And it is our contention that the search of the vehicle may have been illegal. And as a result of that, we intend to vigorously fight that particular issue.
So there is still a question here, though. I mean, why did he have an assault rifle in his trunk? I mean, there's that. I mean, what was that all about? You know, that possession of a loaded firearm, that's a pretty big deal. 2 years. Yeah. You know, not as big as carrying a concealed weapon without a permit. That's a 5-year felony. Well, anyway, we've also got other news. We'll get to it at certain points. We'll get a little more in-depth a little later in the show. We've only got one Republican left standing in the Republican presidential primary field. when I was here on Tuesday, we were talking that Indiana was going to be the last stand for Ted Cruz. That turned out to be the case. Looks like John Kasich said sayonara as well. We'll touch on that. Other subjects, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders isn't going away. I guess you win Indiana, and even though you're down way on delegates, keep fighting. What the heck? Money's still there. Make it fun. Make it interesting. That's what we're trying to do here. Steve Gruber Show.
Taking a closer look at the stories that affect you most with a big dose of common sense.
I know you deceived me. Now here's a surprise.
You're listening to the Steve Gruber Show. I'm Kyle Malin, editor of the MERS newsletter. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a big news day today. We had a big news day yesterday. The Republican presidential primary is essentially no more. John Kasich decided he was going to get out of the race. He announced that he is suspending his presidential campaign and effectively dropping out of the 2016 race for the White House. Let's listen to that audio if we could. Five.
Throughout my campaign, I have said the Lord may have another purpose for me. And it set all the pundits of Twitter. Does that mean he's not committed or he's not focused or he's not energetic? It showed to some degree how little they understand about life. You see, I have always said that the Lord has a purpose for me as he has for everyone. Okay. And as I suspend my campaign today, I have renewed faith, deeper faith, that the Lord will show me the way forward and fulfill the purpose of my life. Thank you, and God bless.
That's John Kasich, the governor of Ohio. He is getting out of the race. He's the last challenger to Donald Trump, basically. So now the Trumpster is primed to be the Republican nominee for president in 2016. All right, we're going to change gears here. Joining us on the other end of the line is L. Todd Wood. He's a journalist for the Washington Times. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, good morning, Kyle. Thank you.
Well, tell us about a Muslim mayor in Europe. What's going on there?
Well, yeah, London specifically, as well as many other Western capitals, has had really unfettered immigration from a lot of different Muslim countries for some time now. And it's starting to have an impact in changing the culture of the city and really the values and even the legal systems in the United Kingdom. And London is about to elect its first Muslim mayor, the first Islamic mayor of a Western capital ever. So it's quite significant. And, you know, that has brought a whole host of other issues. The Labour Party in London has been beat up rather drastically lately due to a lot of anti-Semitism that's come out, anti-Israeli policies. Hamas and Palestine actually started, hawking their close relationship with the new government in London, and how that was a death blow to the Israeli Zionist, agenda. So it's quite significant.
So if they go ahead and do this, and it looks from your reporting that they're by and large ready to go, I guess what kind of impact are the residents of London going to see because of this? I guess there are concerns of certain types of policies, but are there anything in particular that they got to be looking for?
Well, the new possible mayor has gone to great lengths and his cadre basically to say that they will be anti-terror. But, you know, that's to be seen. I mean, if you have... the other thing is that the guy was caught on tape saying that moderate Muslims who aren't, who are against Sharia law in the UK and other issues are basically Uncle Toms. So, he's pulled that from the kind of the Black Lives Matter, tactic, if you will. And so I think it's, to be seen how, Erdogan in Turkey is an Islamist. And for years he said he was not trying to implement Sharia law or anything like that, and he basically has done so, and it's become an autocracy. So, you know, I'm not saying that's going to happen in London, but people definitely need to be on guard as to what the real agenda is, which is typical.
Sadiq Khan is his name, and he's apologizing for using the Uncle Tom slurs against moderate Muslims. Even though he's done this, he's basically, is there just not any opposition to him? I guess, how do they elect a mayor in London?
Well, I'm not up too much on the exact political process, but it's, you know, it's the United Kingdom. It's where our, you know, system of government came from, basically. And they started the Magna Carta and Western civilization, so it's definitely a, you know, a democracy, but it's, the culture and the demographics of the city have changed so much that it's opened us up to this type of possibility happening. So, you know, my point in discussing it was to highlight the issue and make people aware that there are consequences to changing your culture in a permanent way.
Just taking a look at the Daily Telegraph here from London, Sadiq Khan has a 12-point lead over a conservative rival named Zach Goldsmith, according to a new poll. However, the results revealed if a different conservative had been running, a gentleman named Boris Johnson, he'd actually be leading the Labour's candidate, Sadiq Khan, by 2 points.
Yeah, there's been some tactical missteps on the in the opposition, the Democratic opposition, I should say. So, you know, that has definitely been a problem, and then there's Goldsmith hasn't run a great campaign, obviously. But, you know, that type of thing gives openings to other forms of, you know, agendas or politics to rise, and that's what's happened.
Now, elsewhere in Europe, spring is here, and violence in East Ukraine is here as well, according to your headline in the Washington Times. Russia has pulled some jet aircraft out of Syria, but has replaced them with high-performance helicopters, signaling a shift in the fight to more close-in operations. That's got to be a little bit of a concern, isn't it?
Well, yeah, the Russian agenda, you know, Putin, I've said many times on this program, is a master of escalation and de-escalation, and he knows how far to push until he gets serious, you know, pushback. And that happened in East Ukraine, and he slowly, you know, let that simmer for a while. They did do a military expedition in Syria, which has been extremely effective for them and their geopolitical goals. I mean, Russia and Iran are now the hegemon in the Middle East, along with the terrorist army Hezbollah and the Syrian government. So that has been done, and now it seems that the attention is focusing back to East Ukraine. Putin has pulled some forces out of Syria. I mean, they don't have a lot of money, but they have used... They have played a weak card extremely well, and now Russia is selling Iran a lot of weapons and getting a lot of that $150 billion that Obama opened up. So he is now able to look back at East Ukraine and keep that area scenario unstable, which is not good for freedom in general.
So the Ukraine government has reported that 3 servicemen were killed and 7 injured over the Orthodox Easter weekend in spite of the truce negotiated for the religious holiday in advance. Pro-Russian rebels said their lines had been shelled over 160 times by government forces during that same period. This is an issue that's going to be there for the next president, isn't it?
Oh, big time. You know, I've been to Donbass. I've been out to the front lines in East Ukraine, and it's not a good situation. You know, it's going to be a low-level conflict for a long time. If Putin actually saw an opportunity to cement further gains and possibly take further territory, he probably would. You know, the new...
All right, we're going to have to go to a quick break here. We'll come right back to you. Todd Wood from the Washington Times. You're listening to the Steve Gruber Show. We'll be back.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
You're listening to the Steve Gruber Show. I'm Kyle Mullen, editor of the MERS newsletter, filling in today. Appreciate you joining us. We're joined by Washington Times reporter L. Todd Wood. He's joining us for a second segment. We were talking about the Ukraine, Russia, Putin, And Siri and I, afraid we had to cut you off here before we went to break, but I wanted you to finish your point here.
Well, I think I was talking about Putin in Ukraine, and that situation is going to be simmering for a long time. I mean, that's basically all I was saying.
Oh, right, right, right. And that the next president, this is something that they're going to deal with, whether it's Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump. How have their positions changed and how they're looking at dealing with the situation with Russia?
Well, we've seen Hillary Clinton's, you know, way that she would possibly deal with Russia, because she did it and it failed miserably. And the reason is that Russians only respect strength, and they will take as much as they can take until they make it obvious they can't take any more, and that it's going to be dangerous for them to keep going. So that's what happened under Clinton, and that's basically why we have the situation in Ukraine now with Russian troops in the east and having annexed the Crimean Peninsula, because Putin saw a chance and an opening under Obama, Clinton, and he took it. Under Trump, I'm not sure that Trump is going to be I think the red lines are going to be strong and firm, but the red lines are going to be much farther removed from, you know, the at least the verbal ones that the Obama administration has put out. I think Putin will be less adventurous with American forces, but when there is a red line, it's going to be a real one. That's my gut take on what I hear from him.
Now, just going back to the debates, he was not as firm as, let's say, Ted Cruz, right? I mean, Ted Cruz, he was really waiting to go toe-to-toe with Putin.
Yeah, and I almost see that as more of a bluster, you know. I think Ted Cruz is a strong conservative and a good guy, but I was concerned with some of the comments he made, like carpet bombing. You know, as a previous former Air Force officer, I mean, that's just the words of a man who doesn't understand what he's saying, to be honest. That is, you know, that's just not what you do in situations. You could say use overwhelming air power or, you know, something to that effect, or overwhelming ground force, or a combination. But to say words like carpet bomb, I mean, that just tells me, anyway, you don't really understand what you're talking about. I understand what he's trying to say, but that was not the best way to say it.
Is there any other place, and I appreciate you coming on the show as a frequent guest here, kind of give us a global perspective of what's going on. We were in London, we're in Ukraine now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Anywhere else that Americans should be just keeping an eye on?
Unfortunately, there's a lot of places. You know, the South China Sea is a matchstick waiting to light off.
What's going on there?
Well, you know, China is turning an area of the world where I think a third of the world's shipping or maybe more goes through on a daily basis into an armed camp by basically building islands. And if you take a look at the map where the Spratly Islands are versus China, the mainland, I mean, it's a long ways away. It's like us saying, okay, you know, the Caribbean and parts of Central America are now ours because we're building islands and we're going to claim all that area as, you know, sovereign airspace of China, and we're not going to let you go through unless we want to. It's ridiculous. So that's a serious issue that the next president's definitely going to have to deal with.
So they're just creating islands out in the sea?
Yeah, basically. They're taking coral reefs, dumping a lot of earth on them, and building airstrips, and bringing in fighter jets, and missile defense systems, and radar systems, and nuclear power, and building air bases in the middle of nowhere. It's quite fascinating.
And I'm just taking a look now. Now you've got me completely interested in this. The Spratly Islands, that's between Vietnam and the Philippines. That's not even close to China.
Yeah, that's my point, right? I mean, you look at the map, and then that's a huge shipping lane. I mean, think about it. They used to call the Pacific the American Lake. It's not that way anymore. Our naval forces are diminished so much that we cannot even handle a major conflict at this point, much less patrol areas like that where, you know, we have a vital national interest.
So what can the next president do about that? Can you tell China to butt off?
I think the next president's going to have to. I mean, that's a red line that, you know, the next president needs to be very firm about. We need to possibly move forces back into the Pacific. We need to rebuild our Navy. We need to make it very clear that we're not going to allow another nation to cut off a third of the world's oceans and say they're mine. It just can't happen. So that's the end of that.
So we've got the South China Sea. That's an issue. We talked about Ukraine. We talk about London. Anywhere else we got to keep an eye on?
Well, North Korea is always an interesting place. Iran, North Korea, China, and Russia are the big threats to the United States and our way of life. I mean, North Korea is actively building nuclear weapons and the missiles to deliver them, and they say they want to attack the eastern sea or western seaboard of the United States with nuclear weapons. I mean, they say that daily. So, yeah, that's a threat. The guy's off his rocker, and, he just needs to be confronted big time.
We had a Navy SEAL killed by ISIS fire in Iraq. Why do we still got issues in Iraq?
Well, we have issues in Iraq because we moved all the forces there and left it to crater. It was basically a stable democracy, and yes, it was corrupt to some extent, but Obama removed all our forces way too early. I mean, think about it. We still have forces in Germany, Japan, South Korea. We have them there for a reason, to provide stability after a major conflict, and Obama just completely removed any chance of that happening, so now we're paying the price.
And we just had Petty Officer Keating, a decorated member of the SEALs who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, who was killed over there in Iraq. We've got U.S. advisors in Iraq. They can do nothing but kill and destroy. Boy, this is another issue that the next president has to deal with.
Well, yeah, I mean, that, you know, and Trump has said he's going to deal with that immediately, which I believe, I take him at his word on that. I mean, the problem with what's happening now is we have a few hundred guys sent back into a very dangerous area. It's obviously not, enough forces to do the job, and they're vulnerable.
Well, thanks, Todd Wood. We'll be back after this.